You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. With downloads approaching the million mark, and an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much-appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe the niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top yeshiva podcasts. That proud edifice is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record, and edit, to promote a product that has been a balm and instructor to so many. Just $36. As a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a Newark of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this ark till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of Moya Ritzdeya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen. Shalom. This is On Principle. I'd like to tell everybody with some bit of pride, this is our 101st episode of On Principle. Now, those of you that do a little bit of podcast research will discover that most podcasts do not last more than 10 episodes. So this one has lasted 100, and this is our 101 first episode. And that, I think, is in large part due to the stellar quality of the people we've been interviewing. And someone who's appeared on the program and is a fan favorite for sure is my guest here from Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yitzchak Adlerstein.
Feeling pretty guilty with that intro. You should have really had some kind of Sparty gum who would have gone on for half an hour about the gematria of 101.
Rabbi Yitzchak, I would have hoped that at this point into Chodesh Nissan that we would have been talking about Gishmake Biurim and the Haggadah. We would have been talking about Gevaldike Divrei Torah, weiter another Knechen Maral, perhaps, and how the Shem Mishmul is different than Rav Tzadik in terms of how they understand that Gulas Hanavshis. But instead, we cannot really escape the Milchameh and really what this has done for the Charedish of Frumvelt. And the Charedish of Frumvelt is the world that spawned us both. We are both really products of that same world and really are, I'm not going to speak for you, but our confusion, dissatisfaction, and difficulty with what has been the reaction now into the seventh month of this milchama. I mentioned to you before, Rabbi Yitzchak, yesterday, the statement that I heard from Rav Gifter so many years ago, 40-odd years ago, that there have been tkufas in our history where it's Borur Kishemesh, that this was the hisgalus of the Eiris of Geula. And he pointed to his complete and total certitude that post the Milchemes Sheshes Yabim, the 67 war, it was clear to him that this was the Rabbeinu Shalom being mayor Ha'oros of Geula. And he said clearly that the fault lied primarily in the Bnei Torah, what we would call the Haredi Shevelt, who didn't turn strong enough to their non-religious brethren, who weren't makabel them with more ahava, despite Rav Gifter's knowledge of the Balei Tshuva movements and others that started to arise and the wonderful yeshivas, whether it was Shema Yisrael or Sameach and then Eish HaTorah, he felt that not enough was done down the line. And to use a football metaphor, they fumbled the ball with no timeout. And I don't know what Rav Gifter would have said had he lived to that period post Shmini Atzeres, but I know both you and I spoke about it at the time, and I think we both felt that there was a tremendous hisoyrus of achdus and sense of purpose and a sense of what we need in order to finally bring the kisei of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be sholem. Do you think that we have fumbled the ball in the 6 months?
No, I don't think we fumbled it. I think we ran over it with a bulldozer. I'd also love to be talking about Horus, about the Haggadah. But I find myself sort of almost incapable of focusing on anything else other than the sense of malaise I feel every day waking up and realizing what's happened in our community. I'm probably different from some other people in two ways. One is that I am Anglo like you are, and the other being that I do have friends who are outside of the Haredi community. So the sense of cognitive dissonance between the pronouncements, the apologetics that I hear in the Haredi world, and what I'm hearing from the street is enough to make my head explode. I would add that in the time of Rav Gifter, the complaint might have been, could have been, that we were doing, but we were not doing enough. In the present moment, I think 6 months into it, it wasn't that we were doing not enough, but in one crucial area, just one, we weren't doing anything at all. And that crucial area is communicating to our tzibur a sense that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at Klal Yisrael, when on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided Nebuch on the Gzar Din of what would be on Simchas Torah, he wasn't just looking at Yerushalayim and B'nai Brak and Beitar Ilit and a few other places. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at Klal Yisrael, he looks at Klal Yisrael. And he loves not just Haredim, he loves even Dati Lumi, even Mesaretim, even secular Jews, complete secular Jews. What we have seen in the last 6 months, the Mesiras Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. Most of us Haredim don't have a conceptual apparatus to even deal with that. We're kind of, they must deserve credit for something, but I'm not quite sure that I can put my finger on it. This was an opportunity to be mechanech ourselves in what Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael means. And we have not had a sense of that for 2,000 years. And it would have been so easy in the last 6 months to reach out to everyone else and say, we are part of you. No say, Ba'ol Chavera doesn't mean like another Chakira in Halacha, like, what do I have to do? Like the old literature joke of, you know, like two literature Rosh Yeshiva dancing on Simchas Torah, one turning to the other. Are we Yotzei Simcha yet? That's not the response that was called for. We should have been out there in some manner or form, telling everybody else out there, we have our differences. We have our standards that we're not going to compromise on. But Achinu Atem, you are our brothers and we feel it. And it's all part of one nation that's suffering right now. And it could have been done so easily. And not only didn't we do it, but in the last couple of days, we've been doing exactly the opposite.
Now, you mean exactly the last couple of days because of the lifting of the exemption on the yeshiva light on the draft. That's what you're talking about, correct?
Correct. And it's not just that the Haredi world had to stake out a position. That's eminently true. It is true that those people who are pushing for a change now and would not wait for the end of the war are doing it for political reasons. But anybody who will get up and say that this is all a milchama against Torah, they're all sonei das and they're sonei Torah, they're either lying or naive. They're not living in the same country that I'm living in. Yes, there's a political aspect to it. There is also anger, resentment, confusion from the rest of the country, the good people of this country, about just what Haredim mean? Do you mean to be outliers? Do you mean to be guests? Are you here in transit? Or do you mean to be part of this nation?
Yes, I think that, as I quoted to you earlier this morning, it's like Abba Iban said about the Palestinians, that the Haredi Shevelt did not miss an opportunity to miss their opportunity. And I would say even worse than that, they actually added fuel to the flame with statements that became viral. Statements like, we're going to all leave Eretz Yisrael. Statements like Chas v'Sholem, that any yeshiva bocher should ever visit people in the hospital because of what it will do to their learning. These type of statements were spread like wildfire. And the far left didn't need it. They were already menade, as the Gemara in Bava Metzias says. They already put in nidui the Balei Talmud. But it was the people in the middle, the people who came from Hester Yeshivas, the people who came from Tzionidat Lumi, who heard these statements and I think were so embittered, especially since, as we know, 40 to 45% of the korbonos of the soldiers that have Nebuch died in this Milchama have come from those type of homes, from what we would call frum homes here in America. So I think it's been a storm of negative and piled on negativity.
Now, I submit that, my dear friend, Rav Remelo, that you probably haven't heard half of those statements. When you also listen to and read some of the apologetics of people trying to then support or paint those statements in different hues, and colors, you get some other doozies. My favorite, which is just widely assumed and just keeps on getting repeated, is we're all Shevet Levi, Klal Yisrael needs Shevet Levi, and without our learning, the army can't succeed. Now, you and I believe that to a large extent, that's true, that without Limud Torah, the IDF, Chas v'Shalom, would not have success. That's our recipe for success, the combination of David and Yoav. But understand what is so not palatable about that statement. We have 66,000 people or 70,000 people by now, it's a week later, with exemptions. If you discount those people, I'm not saying if you closed yeshivas, but if you didn't count those people, would there not be people learning Torah? Every time you repeat this idea of Shevet Levi, you're telling a mother of three kids out on the front who've been learning for the last couple of years in the yeshiva, and it has the yeshiva, that their Torah amounts to nothing. You're telling an almana whose husband was a masmid that his Torah meant nothing, because the only Torah that counts is our Torah. And I'd love to know whose Torah that is. Will the Briskers concede that there's Torah among those who follow Rav Shimon Shkat? Whose Torah? How do you have the chutzpah to say it? You may like our Torah. You may want your kids and grandkids going to our yeshivas. But to discount their Torah and say, no, we're Shevet Levi. Now, there's some more. It goes beyond that. I've heard several times just in the last 2 weeks that this is not a Milchemes Mitzvah. Not a Milchemes Mitzvah. Clear Pesach, it's not a Milchemes Mitzvah. Rambam holds that you need Sanhedrin and a Melech, and we don't have it. Discounting the idea, let's not even look at the idea of whether a government that is recognized as a government, faulty or not, by the people, has a din of malchus, which lots of people who are Balei Halacha would say. Discounting that, I've heard several times, people saying the idea of launching a war is toxic to us. Who can make a decision to send a soldier to the front where he might be killed? We don't have people. They're not B'nai Torah. Besides, Israel does not have a need for an army. Could you believe that? I heard with my own ears somebody who's an icon in the Haredi world say that there is no need for an army. Everything is done by people flying drones today. What happened on October 7th? Nah, that was a one-off. We don't need Haredim drafted because we're going to go back to pushing buttons and killing people by drones. The fact that there's a we're facing a multi-front war, that we're still in Shechem and Jenin. I don't think he knows where Shechem and Jenin are.
As the Rambam Hilchas Mochem, of course, says Ezra Sisrol Miyad Tzor
Boya
Lehem. And it would seem that the counter argument is very much in line with the leftist philosophy that is espoused even by some Jews here in America. Jonathan Grazer and Tony Kushner and all these chevra in California who are saying that the Jewish values were hijacked because this war is immoral, as Bernie Sanders says. So really, look how close the Haredish apologists are to the left wing in America who are calling for an immediate ceasefire. The only thing is, one is a Torah perspective and one is a humanistic perspective, but it amounts to the same thing.
And that Israel does not have the right to have an army because they're all Sunni das. Satmar Neturei Karta outlook has been
strengthened, right? Has been given a little bit of muscle. As our good friend Michael Broyd wrote in that op-ed piece in Haaretz, which I'm sure you scanned if you didn't read, where he said there's going to be a little push towards those Orthodox anti-Israel movements are going to get a little bit of a shot in the arm. And what I'm surprised is that there isn't at least some lone wolf Rosh Hashiva from the Haredi Welt who's willing to speak out. Let's hear somebody come out there. Why has there been this circle the wagons attitude to the point that the statements are coming out so ridiculous? There's got to be some Seichel Ayosher happening in Eretz Yisrael.
The reasons for that are a wider discussion, which maybe we should come back to sometime. The Haredi community is one that does feel that it has to circle its wagons. And that means that it lives a very insular existence to the point of being able to say ludicrous things about geopolitical affairs, to the point that there are people in leadership positions who will say things that they know not to be true, because nobody really thinks that what you hear from Gedolim is what they really think. Sometimes they have to say things to be mechazik b'nei Torah, because if you're not mechazik b'nei Torah, they may entertain things, crazy ideas like serving in Tzahal. So that's where we are. But what I'm interested in hearing from you is that neither of us, I believe, came onto this broadcast simply for catharsis. Although maybe that's true of you. I actually need the catharsis. I'm just, what do we have to offer? What's really our message? Who are we speaking to tonight?
I think our listeners represent an area of yeshiva background training and learning who are waiting to hear something a little bit different than the party line, waiting to hear different than just apologia, and hoping that there's other people like-minded. You know, I mentioned to you yesterday that one of the things I thought was missing that needed to be stressed was, yes, the army life has its risks, and clearly it's a opening into a world that could, if not revolutionize, but clearly change the attitude and the religiosity of Haredi kids that go there. But there is also an incredible thing that is gained, and that has been displayed, which is the nobility, the stoicism, the understanding of suffering. I'm not just talking about being noisibo chaveroi. I'm talking about the myriad number of stories of soldiers that have fought, that have been wounded, that have persevered, that have become models. And when I see their parents and I see the grandparents and I see the pride and conviction and greatness, the type of humility that they display, I say there is something that the Haredi Welt does not have. If there would be members of them serving, statistically, we would be talking, Nebuch, about children dying, that young people dying. But there would be also an incredible benefit that would be gained by the Haredi Shevelt. Not just, you're one of us now, and we can be misached. They would also reap the benefits of the elevated, committed life that they do display when it comes to kashrus, when it comes to diktuk and mitzvahs, when it comes to perhaps bittul Torah. But the things that I have seen, and I don't think they can be faked, are, I stand in awe at, you mentioned before, almanis, yisoyimim, parents, the wounded. The Haredi Shevelt doesn't have those heroes at all. And if the service would start and begin, they could also gain from that. They could also, I think it would also, it would raise that level. It would raise the level of sacrifice to a point where I know it would just strengthen their Avodas Hashem.
I'll meet you and raise you one. One of the defining aspects of our generation is that we all had a sense of mission. The mission at the time was taking a very, very small Torah community and building it up in America or in other places, not just Eretz Yisrael. We swam against the current. Many of us had a hard time trying to sell it to our parents who were looking for us to become lawyers and doctors exclusively. But we did. The fact that we thought that we were fighting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's war animated us. A few years later, there was a sense of mission of Kiruv. After the Six-Day War in particular, there was a change. There was an openness. And for more than a few years, there was a chance of really bringing in our lost brothers and sisters. We did such a good job of building up the Haredi world that today we produce cookie cutter, sometimes even a little robotic, B'nai Torah. They are committed to halacha. That's not chopped liver. Ribbono Shel Olam wants to see that. But except for a miut that can feel that the mission is to become gedolei Torah, because that really is not shaykh to most people. If you're going to be just another one of a large army of a few hundred thousand people who are Yireim Ushleimim, it doesn't really work for their kids. Their kids, if you don't give them some mission, they're going to find some other mission. You know, the one thing that you can unfortunately draw back from, if you realize the implication, is that the anti-Semitism that we see in America and in other places, yes, much of it is Muslim. And they also have passion for an ideal. The rest, people who've been brainwashed by wokeism and what they get in MSM. But, you know, the people who are taking off time to march in the street, they also are looking for a mission. They can't just go about doing their business and saying, yeah, I'm just going to get up in the morning, do my thing, and go back to bed at night. I want to feel like I'm contributing something to the world. So good, let's do in the Jews, at least do in the Zionists. But so often, lahavdil, our own kids can't feel that. They've never really questioned what it is to be a Yid. One of the reasons why we do have dropouts, and don't kid yourself, our dropout rate is close to that of the Dati Lumi world, at least to the more Torani part of the Dati Lumi world. And we have to examine the reasons for that. Part of it is that people just can wake up one day and say, you know, I was born into this and it's no longer comfortable. And they don't have any good reason for why they want to stay from, why they want to be the Ovdei Hashem.
Yeah, I would say that one of the things that I was, a limud zchus that I would say towards the attitude was probably the 6 or 7 months or 8 months that preceded Shmini Atzeres. And I think, unfortunately, it got under the skin of many. And Shevet Levi, you know, let's take the mushel the way it was. We're about to re-experience Yetzias Mitzrayim. And of course, you know, Aaron, who headed Shevet Levi, shooed away Tzipora when Tzipora came to be part of Klal Yisrael. He said, we don't need any more Avodim. Now, it's interesting, of course, that Aaron technically was not involved in backbreaking work. He was, he'd been given the p'tur that Shevet Levi had. Yet Shevet Levi recognized that they were Avodim as well and had the schus of the Yetziah as well as anyone from Dan or Yisachar or God who had a whip cracking on his back. And the reason is because they heard the tzoras of Klal Yisrael. They were the advisors. They were the ones who sat on Shabbos and every single evening and heard the pain and had to be makabel that pain. The empathy and regesh was what made them part and parcel of those avodim. And I would assume that those Yoytzei Mitzrayim were very embittered before the Gilui of Moshe Rabbeinu, before the Gilui of the beginning of the Makos. And I'm sure some of those Levim had to hear Tainus on God. They had to hear left wing type of sentiments. They had to hear the typical in the Gas Mitzri Avodah Zorah tinged ideas. But they were makabel, and they heard it, and they understood it, and they did their job. And I would say that that is something that we always have to understand. We can't expect tit for tat. We can't say, well, look what you said about me 7 months ago, that I'm a parasite, that I'm a rat, et cetera, et cetera. Part of being Shevet Levi is accepting the double standard, is recognizing Nebuch. You know, as my father used to say, Vus vilste fenem, eres opgechovet en ashtal. You know, as my father would say, when sometimes a balabas would get under my skin a little bit, he would say, he never learned Torah. He was raised in a barn. What can you expect? And I think that was the Levium in Mitzrayim, and that's what the Shevet Levis of today should have been able to do. Instead of saying, okay, you guys hated us now, we're going to give back the type of invective and name calling. I'd say one other thing here. You mentioned the sense of purpose. You know, Menachem Lipman, whose father-in-law I'm very good friends with, Moshe Abramowitz, had an idea that he was really castigated about, which is, we'll gav bechinus. And if you get a certain level of a bechina, if you pass, okay, you're from Terosayim Nosay. And as much as people hate tests, there's got to be a way to weed out the wheat from the chaff. And some sort of system like that sounds like the type of thing that the moderate lawmakers would be makabel.
And it's a great idea. And I think that, except for a couple of the radical politicians, most of the country isn't even expecting us to go that far. They would be happy to leave untouched those B'nai Torah who actually are learning Bahasmada in yeshivas. But it's the rest. I couldn't believe my ears when I heard one of the people we were talking about before, when he was asked, that, well, what about the people who are not Torah Samunasim? And they're for a little while, or they register in yeshiva and don't show up at all. The kind of people that we have letters from Evchatskal Abramsky, Rav Yashiv, Rav Shach, saying that those people should be in the army. And that's before the army started to soften about actually providing them with an atmosphere that they could thrive in Ruchnias. But what about them? There are thousands. There are tens of thousands. You see them every place in Yerushalayim. They have jobs. They're wandering about. They're not in yeshivas.
That's right.
Why can we not say what Gedolei Torah said decades ago, that those people belong? And the rest of the country is not really pushing that the real Lomdei Torah should be drafted. Maybe they would want, and I don't think it would be the most terrible idea, that between the time that an 18-year-old leaves Yeshiva Katana to Yeshiva Gedola, that he would have to spend the Bein Azmanim doing real basic training. One Bein Azmanim. Let him be prepared if we need them. Or be able after, when they're 24, 25 years old and they're ready to leave Yeshiva, that they'll have to spend a year or two in the army, like the rest of the country.
All of these things, I think we're in intense agreement, you know, and I think that I wish the voices of condemnation would be as pained, but also hoping for a solution, you know, and I think that we're both upset about it, but we're upset because these are our people, right? We're upset because we love the Olam HaTorah. We love the Olam HaYeshivas. And we know how fantastic it is. There's nothing like the din of the Beis Medrash. There's nothing like the sound of a great yeshiva alive with conversation. And nobody denies that. So let's leave as on principle, let's go to that principal text that is so much the blueprint, really, of Limud HaTorah, of Kol HaShana, as Rav Soloveitchik says, Tzei Ilmad. Do you have a rayon in the Haggadah?
Yeah, I do. There was a maysa back in the old days of a very, very talented young man in the UK who went on to, I think it was first Partners in Torah, but he wound up as quite a Kirov guru. When his talents became apparent, he was put under pressure to spend more and more time doing what he was doing, which he did very, very well. He went to Rav Shach and asked, should I take this job? Should I throw myself more into the Kirov business? Or should I continue learning? I can see myself learning for another good couple of years. And Rav Shach told him to take the job. And he pointed to the Chassam Sofer's Hagdoma, to one of the volumes of his Shalos and Chupas. I don't remember which one, but it's there. It's in print. Everybody can find it easily. Chassam Sofer, if I remember correctly, says, on the Pasuk, Kamachasa ani me Avram. Chassam Sofer says, the truth is that Avram Avinu was not roi for Nevuah, because he spent so much time ministering to others, speaking to others, trying to convert the world into believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Chassam Sofer says that Avram Avinu was really not on the Madrega for Nevuah because he had spent so much time that it affected his own Aliyah and Ruchnius. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Avram Avinu, you take care of my children and I'll take care of you. And he artificially compensated him for the time that he invested in doing for others. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mashlin him artificially, made him a Navi, even though he really hadn't been put through all the paces on his own. That was Rav Shach's message to him. So that may just increase my confusion of why we can't find a way. Now, back in our day, Rav Moshe was famous for saying during the height of the Kibbutz revolution that the same way that there's an Indian of Meister Ksofim, there is a Meister of Zman. And people should spend 10% of their time doing Kibbutz. He didn't mean all their time. He elaborated upon it later and explained that he meant of your free time, your Bein Hasdarim, your Bein Hasmanim. Some of that time you have to be makdish, at least a tenth. You have to be makdish to helping others. If we would have in our community, if everyone in the Haredi world, young and old, would have spent 10% of their free time visiting the sick, going to shiva calls, knocking on the door of Almonas, or just of families of Miluimnikim who were without a male in their house for 4 or 5 months running, and saying, we're here to help, we would be in a very, very different position today.
Just to be Messiah and to concur with everything you're saying, but recognizing that we have to stitch together more than just a coalition based on pain. I'll just mention something that I saw from Ha'ara from Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook, Zecheinu Levracha. He points out that the Maisa in the Haggadah, that's right after Avodah Mayinu, Maisa b'Reb Eliezer, b'Reb Yeshua, b'Reb Elozer ben Azayah, b'Reb Kiva, b'Reb Tarfin, Shem Subim b'Mnei Brak. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda felt that these Tanoim, who are the first great teachers mentioned in the Haggadah, each one has a certain special nekuda that the Baal Haggadah wants us to be oymed on. And Rabbi Kiva, of course, is obviously well known. The others, it's sort of harder to put your finger on. But when I saw this, I was thinking that the very first Tana is Reb Eliezer. And he's, of course, the very first Tana in Shas, who's mentioned as well, right? The first Mishnah in Brochis. Reb Eliezer, who Reb Tzvi Yehuda points out, was Chaylik with Reb Yeshua on very essential issues. One essential issue was the Gemara in Sanhedrin, whether Klal Yisrael is Nigal B'tshuva or not. Reb Eliezer said that Klal Yisrael is only Nigal and B'tshuva. And Reb Yeshua said Chas V'Sholem, and he brought Psukim from Daniel to prove that point. Obviously, those two squared off again, whether Loi B'Shamayimi on the Tanur Shalachnoi. Once again, Reb Eliezer, as Reb Tzvi Yehuda says, never integrated in the same way that the others did. True, he had his Talmidim, they came around him. The end of his life was only really a mirror of what his life had been. He had been an amazing teacher, but he had never really become one. He was ready to separate. He was ready to hold the world to a certain standard, a standard that Shamayim agreed with, but wasn't necessarily a standard that the world could agree with. And he, of course, he had his Talmidim, and of course, he might have been the greatest, but he was not part. He wasn't a chelek mamish, he was muram meyam. Whereas Reb Yeshua stands as part of Klal Yisrael. Reb Yeshua, he was the nafach. He was a person who lived in such an urama situation in his relationship, of course, with Reb Gamliel. So these two, Maisa b'Reb Eliezer b'Reb Yeshua, they were taka, show you, mesuvin, they could taka be biyachad. We could taka have our Reb Eliezer nikils, and we could taka have our Reb Yeshua nikils. And they're taka both biyachad. And I would say, one of the ha'aris which I've never seen anyone be oymed on is that in the Braisa, that's only in the Haggadah with this nusach, Yochol Merish Chayidish, Tamad Lomer B'Yamahu, Ibi Yamahu Yochol Mivaydiyay, Tamad Lomer Ba'avur Zeh Loi Amarti. Who's the Amarti? That despite all the learning you can do, despite all the hachonas from Rosh Chodesh and for 2 weeks in advance and all the siddurim, that the ikar is that zman when the people who can't learn show up, the people who didn't have time to prepare come to the Seder. Even though you would say, no, of course, it has to be in advance. We need all these hachonas, but there's the reality. Who's the amarti? So I would like to suggest that is the unstated sort of progenitor of Reb Eliezer. As the Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu himself. It's Moshe Rabbeinu who is talking. He's not in the Haggadah, but his spirit, he's the one who's talking. Lo Yamarti, who's that? It's Moshe, who you don't really hear his name. Lo Yamarti Yabashash Matzvav Nachavanecha. The Gemara says that Moshe wanted Moshe and Eliezer were sort of like, this Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was sort of like Moshe's son in a way. Moshe also, as Rav Salvechik says, stayed Mura Me'am. but he understood. He understood what it meant to be Rabbeinu. He understood what it meant to be Misached. He understood, like Rabbi Yeshua, that as much as he brought it from Shamayim, it was Loi B'Shamayim He, and that when we come together, we could hopefully use this period, not just as a learning period, but as a period that we could be Yoshev V'Yachad, and we could take off that mantle of his Nasus that unfortunately, I think, pervades, the mantle that Rebbe Eliezer understood when he could sit together with Rebbe Yeshua. And hopefully we wünsche das ein, only the best Yonta for all our listeners. Take care, my friends. Be well.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.